Spock slept through Jim's many missives after. His body was exhausted, and though he roused twice to use the restroom, he was hardly awake and functioning. In all, it was 18 hours and Saturday before he truly woke. When he reached out a hand and pulled his pad towards him, it pinged sullenly. Someday, Spock thought, he would find out how Jim managed to make even technology reflect his moods. Your mom has been over here twice. They've been talking for hours. Wake up, asshole. Seriously, how are you still asleep? Spock, your mom hates me. Wake up. Spock. Spock! Spock groaned and rubbed a hand over his face before hunching over the pad, forcing his fingers to type. My mother is likely preparing Christopher Pike for parenthood, something she has experience in, and the captain does not. She does not hate you, but I am beginning to find myself in that neighborhood. It's been 2 days, and Vulcans don't need as much sleep. Suck it up. Is she still there? No, she left 3 hours ago. I will speak with you later. I am going to finish waking up. If that is code for sleep, I'm disowning you. Spock stared down at the pad, and then set it aside, deciding that it was not worth it to keep that conversation going. That way lay homicide, and Spock had only just gone to the trouble of saving him. He woke up a few hours later, because his body staged a revolt about being asleep. His pad had a single message. Bam! Disowned. Snorting, Spock got up and went through his morning routine, despite the fact that it was 1600. When he made it downstairs, his foot had barely touched the floor before his mother linked her arm through his and said, "Step into my office." Her office was technically his father's, and Spock knew that this was not going to be a conversation he was going to enjoy, from the way his parents sat themselves on one side of the desk while he occupied the lone seat on the other end. At least he was on the other side of the door, though he doubted very much he would be allowed to make a break for freedom. "Captain Pike has been given custody of Jim Kirk," his mother said. "Pike's going to pursue adoption, just to make everything." Spock nodded, and wondered why he had to hear this now, when he could just as easily have called Jim and gotten the entire story. "You know how we feel about him," Amanda continued, tucking her hair behind her ear. "But, well, it seems cruel to separate you right now, and so we'll spend the summer here, the four of us as a family. But there are rules, Spock." "Conditions," Spock clarified, and she sighed, glancing at Sarek before nodding. "If you want to think of them like that, sure. The first is that you have a 10 o'clock curfew, which is reasonable for a 14-year-old. The second is that you're going to have an electronic curfew of midnight, which means no messaging, calling, texting, nothing after midnight. Your weekends are for you, and we spoke with Captain Pike, and we're not going to dictate which house you sleep at, but the rules will be the same at both houses." She paused, and then worried the nail polish on her thumb. "The last one. Spock, if you feel like you just can't be here anymore, for whatever reason, you have to tell us that you're going. Or Sybok. Just, someone needs to know. Do you find these unreasonable?" Spock looked at her, and then at his father. "We will stay for the summer." "I have a paper I want to write," his mother said, "and Sybok might actually go to medical school if we keep him here. Do you agree to these conditions, and have your word that you will adhere to them?" Sarek asked. And Spock thought that this was why the Vulcan High Council kept sending his father away to speak on its behalf. He was implacable. It was May, which meant almost 4 months until they would go back to Vulcan. 4 months. It was going to have to be enough. "You have my word," Spock told them. "May I be excused?" "Go on," Amanda said, and Spock shut the door carefully behind him, only to be confronted with Sybok, who had clearly been listening in. Sybok, Spock noted, was in scrubs, and he looked like a hedgehog. "You look like a hedgehog," Spock informed him, and Sybok cheerfully flipped him off. "You look like a condemned man given a stay of execution," Sybok replied. "Are you going back to the hospital?" Spock asked Sybok, ignoring the last bit, because most of the time it was better to just ignore Sybok. "Yeah, just to be on suicide watch," Sybok said, shoving his mouth full of food in a truly alarming way. "You want to split a cab?" "Yes," Spock said. "Wait a moment while I collect my bag." When he came back downstairs, Cybok was already outside in a cab. "You seem very dedicated," Spock observed, as the driver pulled through the gates and out onto the street. "They need me," Cybok said, spreading his hands wide and smacking Spock in the chest as he did so. "Can't live without me." "That would be more amusing if it were untrue," Spock told him. "Yeah, you just don't have a sense of humor." "That is patently untrue," Spock told him, climbing out of the cab and looking at Christopher Pike's house. "Oh, hey, I could totally meet him right now. You promised you'd let me," Cybok said. "Not right now," Spock told him, and shut the door firmly. This would either go very well or extremely terribly. He had a feeling it would be the latter, and he did not need an audience of Cybok. Pike directed Spock upstairs, and he knocked on the locked door. "Jim," he called, and the key turned and the door swung open. Spock glanced up and was very abruptly unable to cross the threshold. "You look terrible," he said. "What did you do?" "Nothing," Jim said, and he sank back onto the bed with an air of someone who could no longer endure the force of gravity. Spock forced himself into the room, shut the door carefully, and turned the key in the lock. "Have you eaten?" he asked, keeping his voice steady. Perhaps because they had been in a hospital, Spock had been more accepting of the physical toll Jim's body had paid. Here, in the context of a home, Jim looked infinitely worse. The theories of relativity supported that logic. It could be equally true that behind a closed door, given 48 hours to himself, Jim was killing himself about Tarsus IV. "Yeah," Jim exhaled. "Are you lying?" Spock persisted, and Jim gave him a tired smile before gesturing to an empty plate. "That proves nothing," Spock told him, but he sat next to Jim on the bed. "There may be very well-fed birds outside." They sat in silence for some time, both of them acknowledging what conversation was impending, and neither of them willing to be the first to raise its specter. But the silence grew ever more tense, and Jim had begun to worry the skin on his wrist, and so Spock reached over and took his hand and said, "Quiet. I think it is time you told me." "I didn't," Jim started, and then, "You've been in my head. Why do I..." "Because, and I realize this may shock you," Spock said dryly, scooting down so that he could lay beside Jim. "Your head is not exactly coherent." It was true, but perhaps not the best explanation. Jim's head had not been coherent, but Spock had also been trying to respect his privacy, so while he had been present in Jim's mind, he had not been aware. "Fuck you," Jim muttered. "Just here." He gripped Spock's hand and put it to his face, and then held Spock's wrist as though to anchor him there. His face was hot under Spock's fingertips, and his eyes were glassy. "I can't say it," Jim explained, sounding resentful and hoarse, and Spock adjusted his fingers on Jim's head and nodded. "Take me through it," he said, and Jim did. Tarsus IV was set up into 6 different districts, only 3 of which actually existed. As Kodos had made sure that everyone was as deprived of technology as possible and had set himself up as a benevolent dictator, no one questioned the number of districts. Except for Jim, who was a shithead. Kodos kept all the technology for himself and made everyone work long hours. Rumors of illness started, circulating by the second month, most of it concentrated in District 4, which did not exist. Those who disagreed with any aspect of Kodos's governing style was relocated to another district. But Kodos had no real reason to do anything but rule with an iron fist, and after a couple of months, things were fine. Most people had settled into their new reality. And then the crops started failing, and the animals started dying and giving birth to stillborns, and people started to get nervous. Jim sent Spock the picture, and then was called to the capital. He had stood in a plaza that was gated in with high, high walls, and Kodos stood on the balcony, talking about morale and a need to survive, the needs of the many and the risks of any colonization attempt. Spock, as Jim told it, could feel the hot press of the Tarsus sun, the smell of exhausted, unwashed bodies, the electric whine of fully charged phasers. "The thing is, thank God Mom was who she was," Jim whispered, because Winona Kirk had believed in letting her baby boy practice with a phaser, had taught him to take one apart and put it back together, how to charge it and flip the settings, draw and shoot in one fluid movement. Winona Kirk had taught Jim what a fully charged phaser sounded like, and Jim had recognized the sound. And Jim had run. "You ran?" Spock interrupted, pulling back and staring disbelievingly. Jim looked at him, then away, too fast. "What did you do?" Spock pressed, and Jim shook his head and closed his eyes. So Spock fell into his mind again. Jim had backed himself towards the door, trying to appear like a bored kid. He had grabbed one of those whining phasers, and he had shoved the guard down, and he had fired. "Did you?" Spock started, wondering if Jim had changed the setting from kill to stun, if the phaser even had the alternate setting. "I don't know," Jim said, and Spock nodded and allowed the lie. Jim got the door to the gate open, because no one had expected a jailbreak, and he had run, screaming at everyone to follow. He stood outside the door, but the Capitol had been deserted, or else everyone had known what was going on and they were staying inside, too afraid to come out, or they just... they had not cared. No one stayed confused for long, not the people in the plaza, not the guards. The guards were outnumbered, though, and people were running in blind panic, creating a stampede, maybe trampling one another, trampling anyone who tried to stop them. They scattered as they ran, ran home, ran into the woods, told their neighbors what had happened, and that was it. "I didn't make it out," Jim said, and Spock found himself back in his own mind, his hand resting on the pillow. Jim swallowed and then continued, "I mean, I should have, but there was this kid who was like 4 and crying and holding a baby, and what the hell was I supposed to do?" So Jim, the 13-year-old, had gone back for the children and gotten himself captured. "It was fine, I mean. 2 days later, Starfleet showed up," Jim said. "And in the meantime?" Spock asked, and Jim shook his head, hand sliding uncomfortably along his thighs, along his forearm. "It was just 2 days," Jim said. Spock looked at him, and Jim looked up. "Show me," Spock said, because he had to know. He could not bear not knowing, even though he was sick to his stomach with what he did know. Jim got up and stood by the bed, fingers playing with the hemline of his shirt before he pulled it off, and then skimmed off his pants, standing in his boxers and staring at the wall behind Spock's head. Spock looked over the scars, faded and barely visible, cuts along his cuticles and between his ribs, mottled uneven burn marks, and the faded discoloration of deeper burns. Jim would never have any need for a tattoo, Spock thought. Jim's life was mapped across his body in pink and white lines, and there was no ink in the world fit to cover this. "It could have been worse," Jim said, and Spock looked at him. "That does not excuse what it is," he said, harsher than he meant to. He could not control it. This was rage, a visceral anger that burned against his chest. He felt bruised by it, fragile and beaten, unsure what to do. "Boyd said most of the scars will be gone in a year," Jim told him, and what Jim probably imagined was a soothing tone, because Jim, unlike Spock, did not care. If Jim felt the bruises he got by being the universe's plaything, he was only ever angry at their presence, and forgot them quickly enough. Jim took bruises and turned them into scar tissue, harder to cut and desensitized, and Spock wondered what that would mean in 5 years' time, in 10. This could not endure, and Spock knew his time here was finite. His parents would take him back to Vulcan at the end of the summer, and he would remain there until he was 18. 4 months was not enough time, though he could admit that it was, probably, for Jim. It wasn't enough time for Spock, who did not know how to live in a place where these things were allowed to happen without retaliation. "I want a burger," Jim announced, brushing off the atmosphere, the mood. He pulled his clothes back on and walked downstairs, tugging Spock's wrist as he went to Pike's office. "I want a burger. Where's your card? I want that place, the good one that delivers. Spock's never seen Revenge of the Space Piranha." "A travesty, truly," Pike said dryly, but handed Jim his credit card. "Order me something," he said absently, and Spock watched, careful, as Jim hesitated just before crossing the threshold into the office. Watched the way Pike stayed carefully still and carefully casual. He was holding the card between his index and middle fingers, just the edge, so that Jim would not have to touch him. Spock was, for a sickening moment, blindly grateful to him, and when Pike glanced at him, Spock tried in some way to convey it. Sure, Jim said, oblivious, and then headed for the kitchen. They have vegetarian, I presume, Spock said as Jim looked down at the card in his hands, turning it over and over again. It's San Francisco, Jim said, grinning at Spock. They have fucking fruitarian if you want it. Spock did not think that that was a real thing. In June, the Senate subpoenaed Jim to testify about Tarsus IV. Spock found out when he went over to Pike's, and Jim, his nose stuck in a battered copy of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, and said, "They're having the hearings next week." To pretend he did not understand was stupid, and so Spock said only, "When were you subpoenaed?" "This morning." Jim reached over to pull the bedside table open and handed Spock a copy of the legal paperwork. Pike said he'd, I don't know, fight it or something. I think he's calling someone now, or. You are a minor. They cannot compel you. Yeah, but I know what happened, and I'm the one who sent out the SOS, and I'm the one who could contact the world outside, and. Jim cuts himself off and scratches at his cheek, just a little too violently. I should have asked for help sooner, and I didn't. Stop being stupid, Spock snapped, snatching Jim's hand away. You asked. It took too long. That was not your fault, Spock said, hard and gripping his shoulders, shaking him. Stop being stupid. Jim shoved him, and Spock fell back, but only a step. He was the stronger of them, and Jim was a gangly, teenaged human. Guilt isn't stupid, Jim snapped. It is when it stops you from living your life, Spock replied. You are going back to school. Everything is looking up, and yes, the circumstances under which this is happening are dreadful. Dreadful, Jim scoffed. But you have an opportunity to prove that you are not the waste of space your stepfather accused you of being. Spock finished. The silence hit hard and rang around them, terrible and awful, and while it was true, and Spock was more terrified of Jim's apathy than he was of his rage or his violent inclinations, perhaps it ought not to have been said. They had been apart for a long time, and Jim had recently gone through terrible things. And perhaps. You're such a pain in my ass, Jim said. Jesus Christ, I can't believe you brought Frank up. The fuck is the matter with you? I miscalculated, Spock admitted, and Jim rolled his eyes. Come on, we're going to eavesdrop on Pike now, Jim said, and they crept from the bedroom, sitting together at the top of the stairs. And the press of Jim's chin into Spock's shoulder felt like forgiveness. Pike was, indeed, fighting. He was using a low, even voice that made the hairs on Spock's arms stand up, but the longer the conversation went on, the more Spock realized that the grateful, vicious feeling of triumph was not just his, that it was Jim experiencing an adult who was on his side, in his quarter, and Spock was desperately glad for it, that he had done the right thing. That it was working because he was going to go back to Vulcan. There would be no moving his parents, and he would be too far away again. And Spock was always there, always would be, was on Jim's side even when there was no sides to be taken. But he was not supposed to be the only person on Jim's side, and it seemed that Pike was happy to fill that role. Later, Jim had wondered if they had wanted to have Spock testify. Given that he had been the one to raise the alarm in the first place, which was wrong, because Spock had only received the alarm and passed it on to his father. At best, he was an intermediary. If there had been any such summons, it had been firmly squashed by Spock's parents before he had heard anything about it. And now, instead of testifying, they were sitting on Pike's couch, having stuffed themselves full of pizza, and watching highlights of the day's testimony with high levels of disdain. My mom once said that these were shit. Jim said, and Spock looked at him in surprise. Jim never mentioned his mother, not really. He had her rucksack, still packed in the corner of the room, closest to a window. Spock was well aware that Jim would run at the slightest provocation. But he never spoke of her. Oh, they are, Pike said, and Spock and Jim twisted to look up at him. He looked drawn, older, watching the hollow. There's a lot of posturing, a lot of cover-up, and in about 6 months, no one will give a shit except the more fringe blogs and news shows, and even then they'll be dismissed as conspiracy theorists and instigators trying to rile the public and discredit the government. Yeah, Jim said slowly. That's what she said. Pike stilled and then said carefully, You were an infant. You couldn't remember that. Yeah, Jim agreed, but she talked a lot about it after. Every time they'd start investigating something, she'd get all pissed again. "What did she say?" Pike asked. And Spock could see the way he was moderating his voice. Careful, always so careful around Jim. Just that it wasn't a freak accident. She said they should have listened to you, sometimes. Something complicated worked its way across Pike's face. Something Spock wasn't fluent enough in to understand. If Jim understood it, he kept his silence. And Pike said, a little roughly, "She eviscerated them at the testimony. She brought her with you, both of you boys. And she was... remarkable. She said they bought her off. I got a trust fund waiting for me when I turn 18, Jim said. But the calm was vain. He was palpably desperate for these stories of a mother he had lost. Did they? Pike walked around the couch and sprawled in the armchair, pausing the hollow on some pundit or another, frozen in the act of rhapsodizing his opinion. Buy her off? He asked. And Jim nodded. I don't know. I mean, the money's there, but we all got compensatory payouts. The conversation meandered from there. Spock got the impression that though it had been a month, this was the first time they were really speaking to each other. Jim was laughing, bright and easy, and Pike was obviously taken, charmed completely the way people should be with Jim. Part of Spock wanted to record it, or call his parents over, so he could say, "See? This is Jim. You have had the wrong idea all along." Pike told them stories about Jim's parents, about his deep space adventures and what it was like to captain a ship. And after a while, Spock forgot to be interested on Jim's behalf and was fascinated in his own right. Pike had married all of his away team at least once and broken the prime directive dozens of times. "It's important as a peacekeeping armada," Pike said. "But at our heart, we're a military force, and deep space exploration is where you remember that. Every second you might have to fight to keep yourself and your crew alive. You can't sit back and just... follow directives and the rules, because it'll get you killed. But it's not mandatory for new grads to go on a deep space mission, so we wind up with people like Comac, who go their entire career without ever being in a firefight, and don't know shit about defense and war." "The scientific benefits," Spock said, and then broke off. "Oh, sure," Pike agreed. "Enormous, especially when your science officer is on top of things. But you've got to be flexible, because even if your CSO is a botanist, they've got to be able to be an engineer, a physicist, a biologist. Never going to find more challenging work." "Stop recruiting Spock," Jim said, and Spock kicked him idly. "Starfleet is a worthy career path," Spock told Jim severely. "It merits more than a cursory glance." "Federation needs politicians who won't let Tarsus happen," Jim shot back, and Spock stared at him. "I am not going to be a politician," he said flatly. "If you have concerns, perhaps you..." "Wait, what time is it?" Jim asked, and it turned out that it was 23:30, so Pike called Sarek and Amanda to apologize for Spock missing curfew and say that Spock was going to sleep over because it was too late to leave now. Heading up to Jim's room, Spock paused on the staircase, wanting to thank him, to express to Pike what this meant, that he wasn't alone in understanding what it was to like Jim, but also wanting to warn him that Jim was being good right now, that there would be temper tantrums and dark swings and a violent disregard for his own personal safety that had nothing to do with the trauma he experienced on Tarsus IV. "Hey, come on," Jim said, grabbing Spock and dragging him up behind him. "You can't warn him about me. He's got to figure it out." "I was not going to warn him," Spock protested, and Jim laughed at him, digging for pajamas in a drawer. "I thought Vulcans couldn't lie," he said. Spock just lifted an eyebrow at him. He had not lied, but it was simply a matter of nuance. Sybok kept on bothering Spock about introducing him to Jim, relentless and dropping it into every conversation they had. Spock chose the park, where Jim was giving to watching people play with blatant mistrust, but was at least not flinching at every passerby. The literature all suggested that exposure therapy was likely to be the most effective, and Spock was not above bullying Jim and bribing him. They sat on a bench under a tree, Spock with a book on his lap, and Jim with his arms crossed, glaring out at everyone as though they had wronged him from behind mirrored sunglasses. San Francisco was hot, and Jim's bare feet were tucked under Spock's thigh. "Spock!" Sybok called, raising a hand. He was in scrubs, having just come off a shift, and he jogged over to them, beaming and rifling a hand through his hair. "Be nice," Spock murmured to Jim, who looked at him and said nothing, which was not reassuring in the least. "Cybok, this is Jim Kirk. Jim, this is my older brother Cybok," Spock said, and when Cybok reached them, tugging Jim into a stand beside him, Jim said nothing, which was still better than Cybok's opener. "That is a metric buck-ton of pain." Spock closed his eyes, reached his hand out and grabbed Jim's wrist tightly, and waited. "Spock, you didn't tell me your brother was a New Age crackpot," Jim replied cheerfully, and then, less cheerfully, "I like my pain." "No one likes pain," Cybok scoffed, making a face. "Well, I mean, sociopaths and masochists and sadists and..." "Cybok," Spock said, fixing him with a glare and moving himself bodily between them. "That is enough." "I was only commenting," Cybok defended. He started a philosophical discussion. "I don't need mind control, thanks," Jim said, and Spock blinked at him. Cybok frowned, looking at him, and then at where Spock still had hold of Jim. "I don't control minds," Cybok said, looking hurt, pouting theatrically. "I free them." "Yeah?" Jim asked, derisive. "You face your pain and draw strength from its defeat as you accept it. Once you've done that, fear cannot stop you." Spock exhaled, bracing himself, and Jim tilted his head. "What am I afraid of, then?" Cybok stepped closer, and Spock put a hand on his chest with his free hand. "Cybok," Spock said, quiet and doomed. "Losing Spock," Cybok said, staring intently at Jim. It was as though Spock did not even exist, though everything in him wrenched at the declaration. It was not that he was unaware of it, but hearing it was entirely different and unexpectedly affecting. "And accepting my pain is going to make me fear that less?" Jim asked, and Spock squeezed Jim's wrist. Jim twisted in his grasp, and for a heart-stopping moment, Spock thought he would wrench away. Jim only tangled his fingers in Spock's, pressing his shoulder against Spock's. "Stop it," Spock said, not sure which of them he was speaking to. "No," Cybok exhaled, looking surprised, and he took an involuntary step forward. "Pain and guilt can't be taken away like magic," Jim said, not flinching away. "You carry it with you, and it makes you who you are. If you lose it, you lose yourself." The silence was thick and ringing, and Spock wanted to take them both and crack their heads together, but Jim was staring Cybok down, and Cybok was listening, maybe even hearing what Jim was saying. It was mind-blowing and incredible, and Spock had no idea what to do with this. He had expected hilarity, he thought, perhaps childish bickering. He had not expected worn lines on Jim's face, making him so much older than he was, and the wounded expression on Cybok's face, making him seem infinitely younger. Spock realized abruptly that this person was a stranger, that he did not know this Jim, and for an endless moment he was terrified. This was not something he could save Jim from, and not something he could fix by proximity. If Jim was growing up and growing away from Spock, there was little Spock could do but cling to his ankles and plead. "Jim," Spock said, and Jim looked at him and grinned, easy and familiar, and leaned into his shoulder briefly, and it was easy to breathe again. "Your brother's a dick," Jim said. "I can see why you're related." "That was cruel," Spock informed him. "You got the good genes," Jim soothed him, laughing. "Come on, let's get ice cream." "Sorbet," Spock insisted. "Freak," Jim muttered, all affection. And Spock wondered if it was wrong that he did not want Cybok to take Jim's pain, because there had already been so many changes. But a Jim who was at peace? A Jim who was at peace would have no need for Spock. Cybok did not like Jim. "He's mom. He's fucked," Cybok insisted over dinner that night. "Just because he's..." Spock began. "No, no, you do not defend that shit," Cybok snapped at him, and Spock fell silent. Cybok never shouted at Spock. "Do you know what they said about him on the wards? Do you know how many times I have seen your best friend kill people in the minds of others?" "You know nothing," Spock told him. "You have no idea what he... You have no right." "Spock, he's not..." "You will not finish that sentence," Spock said flatly. "You have incorrectly conjunctured from the mind of traumatized. You have no idea what he has endured, and I will not hear anything further. You are not required to like him, Cybok, and I do not need your permission to be friends with him. The only decision you need to make is whether or not you and I continue to have a relationship." "Spock." "It is Saturday," Spock said to his mother, who is watching the exchange with tired eyes. I will be spending the night at Jim's. He did not answer his ringing phone, and when he got to Pike's, Jim was waiting on the doorstep, a wry grin on his face. I do not wish to discuss it, Spock warned him, as they went inside and climbed the stairs. Yeah, don't care, Jim said, closing the door to his bedroom behind them and locking it. You have to stop it, Jim said, when Spock was settled in Jim's bed. I don't care your brother's a dick. It doesn't make you any more or less a freak. It is not. Do you never get tired of being so violently undervalued? They're idiots, Spock, Jim said. I don't know. I mean, they don't count. You must. You cannot be entirely indifferent. You like me, Jim said, picking at a seam on the comforter. Mom liked me. Pike likes me. I think number one likes me. I'm not a psychopath, or whatever he was saying, because I don't care what people think. It's just, not everyone matters in the same way. You don't care about those idiots who say you shouldn't have been born. Not like you care what your parents think. I mean, not all people matter the same, and it's bullshit to pretend they do. Spock looked up at him, up at his drawn face and the fierce jut of his jaw, the way his brows were drawn together. You like me, Jim repeated, and Spock sighed, tugging Jim to lay beside him. Better than you deserve, certainly, he agreed, and Jim laughed. That's why you're my favorite.